This week on the eBay for Business podcast.
I mean, we actually spend millions of dollars in order for all of our listings to show up in Google Shopping. It's not a free service, but you as our sellers actually don't pay any extra for it. And I think that's really important to understand. It's literally part of just the regular fees.
It occurred to me that despite him posing with his phone with the QR code and the item, I never actually scanned it. So I'm in the car and I'm panicking for a minute. And the first thing that crossed my mind was in the eBay messages, they had sent screenshots of what they had on their end earlier that morning. So eBay had given them the QR code and they provided a screenshot of that in our messages.
I'm Brian Burke.
And I'm Griff, and this is the eBay for Business podcast, your weekly source for the information, the inspiration you need to start, run, and grow a business on the world's most powerful marketplace. This is episode 94. Well, Brian, I think you're getting pretty comfortable.
I am getting a little comfortable. I don't want to get too comfortable, though.
Why not? Why not? Well,
that's when mistakes happen.
Yeah, we can edit those out. That's true.
What's
so nice about the podcast.
That's right. Friday's editing day.
We should alert our audience. We have to do so little editing with Brian. It's basically what you hear is what we recorded. That's a good thing.
That's generous, but I'll take it.
Hey, so how was your week?
It was good. I did some listing last weekend, but the week itself's been kind of crazy. I mean, there's been a lot of stuff going on external to eBay that I think has been taking up a lot of people's time and energy and focus. And, you know, just pray we can move forward, hopefully. But there's a lot going on.
Not going on. When I talked to you earlier this week and we were getting ready to put the show together, you talked about something that you wanted to tell me about, some eBay sales story.
That's
you
right.
You remember?
I do now. I had my house painted because it's one of those things that actually is you can support even though we have shelter in place. Having my house painted outside was relatively easy to do, and keeping social distancing, and they do the work outside. I'm not outside. I'm not interacting with them in any way. And when I went outside, I always had a mask on, and they had masks on when they worked. But the porch lights, when they were done painting, I thought, okay, I have almost a 20-year-old house, but there's spotlights on the porch.
Right.
And there's two of them, and they have those like internal canisters, and they're black. They're called ERT lights, E-R-T. And where did I go to get one? I got them on eBay. But as I was looking at the price point, somebody had a package of three for sale. And the package of three was only a couple dollars more, and it was going to get to me faster than a package of two. So what did I do? I bought the three. And then,
smart man.
And then, of course, I was thinking, well, I've got eBay packing supplies from my store subscription. But of course, the small box that I had was too small for one, and then the bigger one was bigger than the three. But I listed the third ERT light. That was one of the things I listed. I listed a book, actually, and actually got questions on the books, which surprised me.
A book? You got questions on a book?
Yeah, a book about flying. It was my father-in-law's book. He was a pilot. He owned a Cessna, and he had all these pilot books, and I saved them thinking, okay, I should just list them. And so over the weekend, I listed a few of them, and somebody wrote me a question about this 1970s Cessna plane book and wanting to know if there was any writing in it and what condition was it in. And I thought, well, good, there's interest.
Did they buy it?
He hasn't bought it yet, but there's no writing in the book. And I said there was one little slight tear on the cover of the book. So he might have been looking for something maybe in pristine condition. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, aren't you smart?
But the ERT light fixture thing, I thought, okay, that's good. I will basically pay less than what I would have paid for the two just by buying three and selling one.
Well, you're a smart consumer. Consumer seller.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm not B2C like a lot of our listeners.
You could be. You may be. Yeah. Who knows? You might have to be. I've been selling pretty regularly. I haven't been listing in the last couple of weeks for some reason, and I got so much to list. But I've had some cursed inventory.
Oh, what's cursed inventory? Just not selling? Cursed,
it's an inventory that keeps getting returned every time you sell it to another buyer, and it's never the same reason. So it's a very expensive bottle of out-of-production cologne. I've listed it twice now, and both times the buyers returned it. One, because they said it didn't smell right. And of course, there's a thing about old colognes is that the top notes tend to disappear over time, but the actual body of the cologne is still okay. And he didn't go for that. So, send it back. And then I sold it again. and it's getting returned because the sprayer stopped working, which happens. I can unclog it. I know how to do it, but I don't want to bother the buyer and say, here, I can tell, show you how to unclog it if it's a problem, but no, just send it back. It's cursed.
Yeah.
I'll try. Third time, hopefully, it'll be the charm. I was making pretty good profit on this bottle, but it's starting to shrink every time I have to relist it.
You're shipping it happens. You've shipped it four times now.
This will be the fourth time it's been shipped that I've paid for it, because it's free shipping and I pay for all returns.
Which is the way to manage returns.
Oh, yeah. It's out of my mind. I don't know. Like, when someone says they're going to return something, I don't like get all upset. I just go, oh, well, there it is. Yeah.
It's nice that they reach out to you too, though, because, you know, I was on the phone earlier this week with a seller who had a return and the person actually didn't reach out. They filed and said it wasn't as described, and she was rather upset. And I just said, look, you know, just.
Well, I automatically approve every return. So I don't get a outreach. All I get is that the return has started, and that's fine with me.
Yeah,
so,
it's simpler.
And I read the details of what the reason is, just so I can get a clue about what's happening. But I've learned a long time ago, I don't question. I just take the return, get it back. And it's only happened once in the 20 years I've been on eBay. How long have I been on eBay?
Over 20, because I hit 21 on the 1st of June. Well,
it'll be 24 years for me in November that I've been buying and selling and started working for eBay. I've only had one time that a buyer has sent me back something that wasn't what I sold. So I think that's a pretty good record.
That's a great record. But about us.
Yeah, enough about us. We really got to get on with the show.
Exactly. So they'll think it's the Griffin Bryan show.
Kind of is.
So what's on the roster for this week, Griff?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because first up, we'll talk with our good friend of the podcast, eBay Vice President of Seller Experience, Harry Temkin. And Harry will share what eBay does to make sure all eBay fixed price listings show up on Google's shopping platform, and what sellers can do to make sure their listings aren't deleted from the daily feed that eBay sends to Google. You know, this is week two of traffic month, and the theme is Google selling. So Harry's going to stop by and talk about that.
I always enjoy hearing from Harry. He's got great info for our sellers. I hope our sellers enjoy this episode.
And he loves to talk. And that's a good thing for a podcast.
It is. And we'll also speak with seller Don Vigeant, also known as Trader Don on Instagram and Garb Safari on eBay, about his recent experience using the QR code feature sellers and buyers can use for local pickup transactions. Have you had a chance? Yeah.
I'm not. I don't do local pickup, but I wanted to find a seller who did. And Don actually reached out to me and said, hey, I want to talk about the experience I had. It's pretty funny.
And he posted on Instagram about it as well.
Yeah. So if you're an Instagram follower, you know the story already, but please don't leave the podcast. He tells it in a different way.
Yeah. You can actually hear his voice.
Hey, and good news this week, Brian. We have questions.
Oh, finally. Yes. That was a couple weeks without. So this is good.
I know, huh? And we'll get to the questions later in the episode, so stay tuned for those. So it's a chock-a-block show. There's lots to do. We might as well get started.
First up, it's Traffic Month Week 2 with Harry Temkin.
The month of June is Traffic Month at eBay, and throughout the month, we'll be hosting segments to help illuminate how eBay and sellers together help drive buyer traffic to the eBay site. We're now in our second week of Traffic Month, and I'm joined by our VP of Seller Experience, Harry Temkin. Welcome back, Harry.
Thanks, Griff. Great to be here. Hello, sellers. Hope everybody is doing well and staying safe.
What's the connection between your role as head of seller experience and driving traffic to the site, which are kind of like buyers?
Great question. You know, the way I describe it is my role is to make sure that our listing tools are easy to use and to help guide you to provide the right information to create a high-quality listing. Because when your listings have all the right descriptive information, your listings are more easily indexed in search engines, and that gives you more visibility to buyers both on eBay and off eBay.
You know, in last week's podcast, Andrea Stairs from Marketing went in depth on why it's so important that our marketing is relevant to the buyers who want to buy and how we work to make sure it is always relevant. How do you think about relevancy when it comes to our sellers?
Well, look, you as our sellers know how important relevancy is. And I think you're thinking about relevancy primarily in terms of listing seasonal or cultural relevancy. And sourcing and listing what your buyers want at certain moments throughout the year is key. So in terms of traffic, relevancy means presenting eBay and specifically your listings at the most critical moments in a customer shopping journey.
Okay. And how are we doing that on our side?
Well, I think one key way, and obviously I think probably the most important way, is through our investment in search engine marketing and specifically with Google Shopping Graph. You know, you and I start so much of our online shopping on search engines like Google, and so does a huge portion of the world. I mean, meeting shoppers then and there is the definition of relevance, right?
It's true. And I know that even for me, I'm a longtime eBay employee and shopper. But when I think about something I need or want to buy online, a lot of times I will start looking for it on Google. How do eBay listings actually show up in Google Shopping?
There's really two main ways. And if you think about it, it's a crazy number because literally billions, if not trillions, of Google searches are happening every year. At the very top of Google search results page, shoppers are going to see a bar of Google Shopping results, right? So you just literally go into search, you're not even on the shopping tab yet, but you type in something you're looking for and they elevate items directly there horizontally at the top. And then the second way, of course, is when you click actually on the shopping tab itself, and then it opens up a whole set of shopping results. And they also provide really advanced filtering to make it easy to find what you're looking for. In a lot of ways, their left-hand navigation is literally very similar to eBay's left-hand navigation. And that's why when we get into talking about item specifics, which we've been telling our sellers how important those are for our own left-hand navigation, they're going to be just as critical for Google Shopping's navigation.
Yeah, because they match up.
Absolutely. Yeah. And when you look down, you know, on that left-hand side, you're going to see, for example, if we're looking at sneakers, the ability to search by size or by type of sneaker, by brand of sneaker, and even by shopping site, you'll be able to filter just for eBay for sneakers of a certain price. Mm-hmm.
So what is eBay's role in getting listings into Google Shopping? How does that happen?
It may seem automatic because of how seamless it is, but the reality is we've worked really closely with Google and are making a huge continual financial investment, actually, in making sure eBay listings get in front of all of these buyers looking for what is for sale in the marketplace. I mean, we actually spend millions of dollars in order for all of our listings to show up in Google Shopping. It's not a free service, but you as our sellers actually don't pay any extra for it. And I think that's really important to understand. It's literally part of just the regular fees, right, of listing on the platform. There is no additional. And whereas, you know, many of the other marketplaces, they do charge their sellers and, you know, make it optional to appear in Google Shopping. Look, we just believe it's too important and it's really a true investment from us on your behalf.
Is it an investment that's actually paying off for us as a whole?
Oh, 100%. Absolutely paying off. In 2019, paid search brought eBay over 260 billion impressions to our listings. And in a given week, I mean, eBay gets an average of 25 million visits from paid search. Absolutely is paying off for us and for you as our sellers.
That's what eBay's doing with Google Shopping. What about sellers? Do sellers need to do anything to make sure that their listings are going to show up in Google Shopping?
No, I mean, literally every fixed price listing is eligible to show up. And obviously we have hundreds of millions of fixed price listings. But here's the key. About 12% of those listings are disapproved by Google because of simple things that US sellers can fix in their listings. So they have certain requirements, and a lot of those are a lot of the things that we've been telling you we need even for our own platform. This should be really easy to fix up your listings.
Okay, so let's go through those. What are the things that sellers need to make sure that they're doing with their listings correctly so that they're going to show up in Google Shopping?
All right, so it really comes down to two main things, Griff. Product images, which are your photos, and item specifics. And how often have we been talking about item specifics, right? We did it at eBay Open last year. We've done it at every upfront. We're doing it on podcasts. So it's only fitting that we'll do it again here to help you get up on Google Shopping. So first, product images. Ultimately, you really do have to have a clean white background. And not only do you need to have a clean white background, you also have to be sure that it has no watermarks, it has no text on the picture, and it particularly has no promotions on it or things like discounts or made in a particular country like the USA. They won't accept those. The listing will be rejected if you have any of those things on your photo, let's say. And also, it really needs to only show single quantity items. You can't do multiples or bundles. Again, otherwise, Google is going to filter all of those out. And so that's why One of the greatest things that we've added to our native application, our mobile app, is image cleanup, which has had an incredible adoption rate. It's a super easy tool to use, and you can use it either when you take a picture or with existing pictures in the carousel, and it instantaneously gives your picture a beautiful, clean background. And it even has editing tools that allow you to further clean the photo. And this is something that we're going to be bringing to our desktop as well later in the year. So it'll be super easy to get your photos ultra cleaned up and make them not even shine on eBay's platform, but on Google Shopping as well.
I can't wait.
Now let's talk about the second piece, which is item specific. Now you've heard me talk a lot about the importance of item specifics. These are the descriptors that help further index your listing in search. And in particular, they are absolutely required for your listing to show up when our buyers are using the left-hand navigation filters on our platform. And ultimately, it is really the same on Google Shopping. But here are some things specifically that you want to take note of. So first of all, if you can provide the GTIN or the manufacturer's product number or the ISBN, these are those product identifiers, those global product identifiers. If you know that, that is one of the core elements that you need to help it appear on Google Shopping. Now, if you don't have those, then you absolutely want to provide brand or the brand name, because they will use that instead of those identifiers to ensure that you will get displayed. Because if you don't have those particular things, you're not going to show up in Google Shopping. After that, it's really important for you to then use things like gender or size. So if we're talking about sneakers as an example, once you have the brand, then you want to get into things that are, again, most important to buyers. Things like size, as I said, gender, color of the sneaker are really, really important. Here's the way I would think about it. One of the great things that we've done in our listing flows is we've now reorganized all the item specifics to display them in the order of importance to buyers. So we're showing you the buyer demand data right in the listing flow, and now we're actually ranking those item specifics by the buyer demand data. If you think about providing those most important ones, those are absolutely going to help you also appear in Google Shopping. And then when you're thinking about your title, because title is also very important, not just on eBay, but for Google Shopping, you want to use a lot of those key descriptors of those top item specifics in your title. And you don't want to use terms like outstanding or cool or stuff like that, superfluous words. They won't help you. Actually, they will hinder you. They will actually reject your listing if you put words like that in your title.
Yeah.
So what I like to go with, again, are the key descriptors, the ones that are the highest ranked item specifics. Utilizing a lot of those in your title will help you tremendously.
And it's really important. I know that sellers really want to editorialize to get that item sold. The proper place to do that with descriptors is in the description. That's why it's called a description.
That's correct.
Right? Doing it in your title. And I've tested this. If you put words or extraneous punctuation in your title, your listing won't show up in Google Shopping. They'll reject it. They also seem reject all caps. They don't like caps. So those important things to remember.
And look, you know, again, all of these things, all of these recommendations that I'm making, they clearly will help you on eBay. But now they will also help you on Google Shopping. It's like a double bonus, right? So all of these core, you know, recommendations not only help you get further indexed on the eBay platform, they also give you a really good shot of being indexed on the Google Shopping platform as well.
Yeah, that's important. And again, we can never stress them enough, the best practices for sellers. We've been doing it for years now, but it's interesting to see how they affect showing up not only on eBay, but on Google Shopping. Because I'm suspecting that a lot of eBay sellers don't even consider, when they're putting a listing together, the importance of showing up outside of eBay on a place like Google Shopping.
That's right. That's right.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about before we go? Yeah.
This is a great opportunity to obviously go check your listings. And I realize that it can take a lot of time to go back and sort of clean up your listings, but it is absolutely well worth your time to do it. And look, we've put a lot of tools into the platform to help you recognize when you're missing certain item specifics or the most important ones. And you should take those recommendations. You can now edit those in bulk directly in Active Listings. You'll see it'll show you it's telling you're missing certain recommended or required aspects. You can edit them right from there. If you want help from a friend, remember we've got Mua. That's the multi-user account access. And you can grant access to your friends right, or other employees, and they can go in and help edit those listings or clean up the photos for you.
Yeah.
So that's another really great thing to remember, is you not necessarily have to do it all by yourself. You can actually grant permission using that tool and have other people help you with it as well.
Yeah, these important tools like the bulk editor and multi-user access, all these are important. What was that percentage again that of listings that are rejected by Google Shopping?
It's about 12%. So yes, it's a big number. You know, when you think about how many millions of listings we're putting up there, right? It's tens of millions, hundreds of millions of listings, because all of our fixed price listings go to Google Shopping. That's a really big number on stuff that's really easy to fix in your listings.
Yeah. And you don't want to be that statistic. You want to be the successful.
You don't want to be that statistic. Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
You want to be the 88% that gets through. So you want to make sure you're following the best practices, as Harry's outlined. And then check. Go on Google Shopping. See where your listing's showing up. I do it. I'm always pleased when I see my things there as well.
I know. It's exciting, right, to see when your listing's going on Google Shopping.
Yes.
Exactly.
You know, you're out there in the world. Well, Harry, on that note, I want to thank you for helping us understand a little bit better how Google Shopping works and what it means to sellers, and especially how sellers can help take advantage of it and make sure they show up.
My pleasure. Great to be here as always, Griff. Thanks again.
And I want to thank our sellers for listening in to the second of our month-long traffic series. Next week, we're going to talk more about social media. We'll have an old friend who's going to visit with us for a while, and she will explain how sellers can leverage social media to better connect with buyers. Last month, we talked about a new feature on eBay. It's the QR code feature for local pickup. And this new feature helps verify receipt of goods by a buyer in a sale where the item wasn't shipped, but instead was picked up by the buyer at either the seller's location of business or an agreed-upon location, usually a neutral location somewhere. Don Vigeant, a.k.a. Trader Don on social media and his eBay store and his user ID on eBay as Garb Safari, just had chance and opportunity to use the QR code feature recently, and we thought we'd talk to him about how it went. Welcome, Don.
Aloha, Griff.
So tell us, what happened what with this QR code feature when you used it?
So 2 weeks ago, I kind of got an out-of-the-blue request for a local pickup from a buyer who was driving many hours from the south. I guess they were going to do some stuff in San Francisco. It was for a vintage troll dollhouse cave with some kind of mangled troll figures. But I was completely taken by surprise, because in this COVID environment, I'm really not getting many requests for local pickup.
Yeah.
You know, I knew I could safely navigate it because I've been having to go out and about in this situation. But anyway, we set it up, and actually it was they who came forward with having their code and everything at the ready. I found out later, this was only released the day before. This was like a week ago Friday. And it, only the previous Thursday did it come out. I had vaguely remembered from the month before talking about the rollout and didn't give another thought until the buyer brought it up. They knew how this was all to be handled. And I knew, of course, it'd be very intuitive through the app. And we met at a local Starbucks like I do for local pickups. And great guy. We actually chatted for a few minutes, and everything mostly went without a hitch. The cool little twist that I had forgot to dish about that I thought was pretty relevant was I usually park behind the business in the basement, and then usually the customer will park in the front. We meet on the side. After we had finished business and I went back to the car, I was going over the photos I took of the customer with the items, because I like to, usually they're good sports about being featured on social media.
Sure.
It occurred to me that despite him posing with his phone with the QR code and the item, I never actually scanned it. So I'm in the car and I'm panicking for a minute. And the first thing that crossed my mind was in the eBay messages, they had sent screenshots of what they had on their end earlier that morning. So eBay had given them the QR code and they provided a screenshot of that in our messages. At that moment, I knew at the very least with his screenshot, I could punch in the 6-digit code, which is also comes with the QR code if I had to. Of course, I immediately texted him, and fortunately he hadn't driven out, and I ran up and got the scan and it was done as intended. But I knew I had that backup because it's a twofold system with the 6-digit code and the QR code as well in case the scan doesn't work.
Now, with the QR code and local pickup, did you have to offer local pickup as a shipping option before the QR code would be available to the buyer as a selection?
I'm assuming it must be, but I do have local pickup on all my items, so yeah, it was a non-issue.
What's the percentage of items that you sell that actually get picked up locally? Let's say pre-COVID, because it's a different environment now.
It was still less than 1%. I would go probably once a month, but I'm also selling some things through the Nextdoor marketplace. So I've been going there as well. So I don't know. This might increase the number of people seeking it, you know, having this verification system. Although it is mostly to protect the seller, I suppose, you know, in terms of having that proof.
Yeah. How did the buyer pay for the item?
They did PayPal right away.
Oh, okay. So they've already paid for it. So now it's just getting it delivered.
Right.
What happens if the buyer... What happens if the buyer wants to return the item? I don't think they will, but they've already taken it.
I had them examine it thoroughly, and I don't want to put too much credence in whatever rapport I might establish, but you know, it felt like a good connection, and my longevity as a seller and best practices. You know, I think there's little surprise to happen with my descriptions and photos and everything.
Yeah, I mean, I assume with a local pickup, they get to look at it. They get to inspect it, so it's not like a matter of, well, I get it home and I have buyer's remorse.
Right. And actually, a funny postscript to that even further is, he left me feedback like a week later, and all he said was fast shipping. And I'm like, what?
Fast shipping.
I still might reply, you know, to his feedback just for the sake of humor, but obviously it wasn't shipped.
Yeah. He had the fastest postal carrier you can imagine. Just stop at a Starbucks. I'll meet you there.
Well, when we did the handoff, he did say he was going to leave me good feedback. So I was actually surprised it didn't happen sooner. And I'm glad to get any feedback whatsoever.
Well,
so
of course. I'll take
it. Yeah.
It's just ironic that the one time a local pickup guy uses the QR code that it's fast shipping, right?
Definitely.
Hey, I heard you were taking a walk in your neighborhood and you saw something.
Yes, I happened upon Brian with his wife's sweet 54 Jaguar, and I got a nice portrait of it, which you can also find on my Instagram account.
What's the user ID for the Instagram?
It's Garb Safari, just like my store. Okay. Yes.
So check it out. You can see the 54 Jag that we've talked about in a past episode, Brian and I have yet to see it. You think he'd drive by my house and pick me up for a ride, but no. Although I hear I probably wouldn't fit into it. It's so tiny.
It's quite narrow.
How's business been for Garb Safari in the last few months?
We've had some decent upticks. I will say the last couple of days with some of the social unrest, there's been a plummet, although I did sell a $350 tiki mug yesterday.
Yikes.
April was especially strong, I think, with the stimulus checks arriving and everything. Did ship more things in May, though, not necessarily as many high dollar things, but a lot of comfort food like music and CDs have been going out. I keep telling everyone if I'd sold puzzles, I'd be making a killing, but alas, I have none.
I do have to tell you, though, I know we've met up there by happenstance in the past. I drove by the Goodwill in Willow Glen the other day on my way to someplace. The door was open. They're opening up. You got to get there and start sourcing.
Yeah, I do. I'm itching. I've never gone this long, although I have been sourcing on Neighborhood Next Door, and I've gotten some items that way. And I've actually been sourcing out of some of my stalled inventory, which have been delisted for a number of years. So there's been a lot that I've gotten back in the game.
Hey, talk about Nextdoor for a bit. How does that work? I have the app. I hardly ever use it, but how do you use it for sourcing? Are people offering things for sale on Nextdoor?
Yeah, there's a classified for free and for sale, and I'll sort it by relevance for newly listed, and I'll go down, and I've actually nabbed a couple of lots of you know, free CD giveaways in addition to buying some. So it's just you work it out in the direct messages, and I'm assuming that there is a margin for you know, scamming or something like that. But yeah. I've been lucky thus far, and again, it's sort of more familiar with, you know, knowing your neighbor kind of thing. I mean, it does go for the broader neighborhood sprawl.
Yeah,
and I have driven 10 miles out of my way for some of the pickups, but. Yeah, so far, I mean, it's not as structured, obviously, as eBay, but it's definitely a viable means of acquiring.
And how does it work when you actually conduct the transaction? Are you standing 6 feet away from each other? And how does that actually happen? I've been wondering how people are doing this. You can't stop trading. Even a pandemic isn't going to stop trading. But how does it? What are the logistics? How does that operate during a pandemic?
So I'll defer to the comfort of the person I'm meeting up with, and we have been relatively distanced, but probably the most colorful interaction occurred right in front of the former By the Bucket on Stevens Creek Boulevard, which is now leveled and everything.
Yeah, they had a fire.
Yeah. In advance, the gentleman agreed to, I was buying some vintage Looney Tunes mouse pads from him, and he said, I will put the mouse pads on the tailgate of my truck. I will step back. You approach. Put the money down and take the pads. And it sounded like, you know, the soup Nazi from Seinfeld. But I have a post on that on my Instagram as well, where I have our interaction. It's kind of humorous in hindsight.
Yeah, if you're looking for a really entertaining Instagram account that is related to eBay and everything that goes along with buying and selling, you should check out Garb Safari. Don specializes, of course, of Trader Don, in all things tiki. Have you seen that market kind of change in the last few months? I would think that people getting ready for the summer, if they're going to be in their backyards, are going to start thinking about things like tiki bars and all the accoutrement that go with it.
Well, yeah, that's definitely always a thing. There's more of a casual interest and more of kind of the party atmosphere, which isn't so much, you know, what I adhere to. I'm kind of more into collector pieces, and there is a matter of kind of the market being flooded here and there. We got a lot of flippers that will buy, you know, some of the high-end pieces, and yeah, that's disgruntling a lot of collectors in the community that previously were able to get things more reasonable. So I don't sell in that regard as much. More, I'm an aficionado of what goes on with that.
I have to confess that I recently will, within the last 6 months, I believe it was, purchase something from Garb Safari. Do you remember what it was that I bought from you?
I do. You got the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile belt buckle. And even more memorable was, I think it took like over a week to get there just to go 5 miles.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe there's some snafu that rerouted it. I mean, I could have dropped it off at eBay Main Street in like 5 minutes.
Yeah, you could have, but it's just as fun to get it through the mail. I have a friend who is obsessed. Somebody I've known since we were babies, actually, and she's an artist, and she's obsessed with the Oscar Mayer Wienermobile. Don't ask why. I never did, and I won't. She claims she dreamt about it as a child. I planned to give it to her, but when she was here the last time, I couldn't find where I'd misplaced it, so I've since found it. And yeah, thanks. It's a real. She's just gonna love it.
Anytime.
She'll put it on a belt, I'm sure. Well, Don, I hope the summer continues to be a success for you, and thanks for sharing that story, and also some tips about next door and where to source. Who knows? Although I got to admit, I'm a little hesitant about going into a thrift store right now myself. I feel I'm in the risk group at my age.
Yes.
It'll get the best of me, and I'll probably run into you there again sometime. Hopefully so. If not, we'll talk again on the podcast. Check in and see how things are going for you over
there. Anytime. A pleasure being here.
Don Vigeon, also known as Trader Don on social media like Instagram, and his user ID on eBay is Garb Safari. You should check it out. You'll find something fun to buy.
You got questions, we got answers.
It's been a while since we've had any questions, Griff.
Yeah, don't remind me. I like to think that sellers are way too busy listing stuff from their death piles, or what I like to call frozen profit piles.
Ooh, I like that.
Too busy to call us. But hark, we have a call-in question and two email questions to read, and we hope we can answer them.
We'll play it, Griff.
I'll play the first one. Here it is.
Good morning. My name's Andy McKenna. I have a eBay user ID of figure eight lures. That's figure the number eight in lures. I have nothing to do with fishing stuff, but at one point in time I was gonna. Anyways, my question is there a way that I can put in my ad that nobody sees the purchase price that I paid for something, and also maybe the source that I got it from, so when I download my reports every week or biweekly, it shows up on there and I don't have to manually enter them? Right now I go through each listing that we sell individually and in Excel and put the source of where I got it from, you know, what auction I bought it from, what pallet it came on, etc. It would be so nice if when I list it, I could just punch that in and not have to do it on the back end of it. Thank you very much.
I think I know the answer, Griff.
Really? What is it?
Annie needs to start using the custom label field.
Bingo! That's exactly what Andy needs to do. And Andy, there's a special field in the listing flow called the custom label. You may not see it. And the reason you may not see it is you have to sometimes customize the listing flow in order to add certain things like a custom label or the eBay for charity or a number of other things. What I want you to do is to go start a listing, and then at the right-hand top of the page, you'll see a link for customize. And if you click that, you'll see a little pop-up window. And the first thing on the list is a checkbox for add custom label. And if you check that and then close the box, now on the listing page, directly under the box for putting in a subtitle, you'll see custom label. And you can use that for whatever you like. That custom label field
It won't show up in your listing to the buyer, but it will show up on your active listing and sold listing pages as a custom label column in that view in Seller Hub. And here's the cool part. When you download a report for orders, the custom label is included as a field so that you can actually then, depending on how you want to use it, you can use that custom label column in the downloaded report. If it's numerals, you say you're just putting in the price, you can actually add all of those together. If it's price and text, you can separate them out and if you want to. But you can use that custom label for any type of text or numeric entry you want to put in. I'm going to put the screenshots of how to do this into the transcript or on the chat page, depending on where they fit best, for this week's episode. So you can go to see the actual process if what I said may be a little confusing. But again, when you start to list your next item, use the customize feature up in the right-hand corner to add custom label to your listing flow, and you'll be able to put all of that information there. Never shows up on the description for the buyer, but it's always available to the seller.
And it's one of those things that's nicely laid out in the flow. And if you're listing a single item, you'll see it right after the title and the subtitle, and then you've got the custom label.
Yeah. I wish we had two. I would campaign for two custom labels.
What would you use the second one for?
One for text and one for numbers. So say I want to put the date or the place where I purchased the item, like Andy wants to do. I would use this, you know, a text field for that. The price I would keep as a numeric field so that I can sum it all together, all of the transactions as needed, to find my cost of goods for all those items that sold.
That's an interesting idea. I do know a seller who uses the custom label to put the date he purchased it, the price he purchased it, and the location. Now, he's a thrifter. And so, like, if he gets it, you know, whatever his local thrifting place is, he just has a few letters that he puts. But then he's got the date and the price and some letters, and that's his code, but he knows what that is. So then if someone does an offer, he can make the decision of, oh, it's been out for a month, maybe I should accept that offer and just move on to the next item or not.
There's another way to add stuff, and I wasn't going to talk about it because I thought it'd be confusing, but I'll mention it really quick. You can bring up a text field as a note for any scheduled or active listing. But if you go to in Seller Hub, say your active view of listings, and you select one or two listings with a checkbox or more, and then go to the action drop-down menu on the top, there's an option for add or edit a note. And you can actually have a little note. Again, it doesn't show up for buyers, but it's a little note where you can write in a large text field. I use that for, and I've historically used it for, where I purchased it, when I purchased it, and how much I paid. And I've used the custom label for location in my garage. Everything has been numbered. But I'm going to switch that around. I'm going to start putting the bin numbers in the note and then just using the custom label for the cost of the goods.
I've used the note field.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. When you add a note for a single listing, it then shows up as like a little yellow bar on the Seller Hub view for active or sold listings or unsold that you can see what it says. It says whatever you put it in. Mine might say Savers, November 13, 2018, and then the price I paid. They don't show up anywhere else. They don't show up in a report. Interestingly, where they do show up is if you print out an invoice for your own purpose, which is one of the options when you print. And I know a lot of sellers who've been using eBay for a long time will use that feature. Then anything you put in the note shows up on that invoice. So it's a way of keeping a record that way. It'd be cool if it showed up in the
reports
as a text field in the reports, but it doesn't. Maybe that's something else we can campaign for.
Those were some things that you should have asked Harry to do.
Darn it. I'll have to get him back on the phone. Well, our next question, Brian, was an email to podcast@ebay.com. It's from Wayne, and it's in regards to shipping. And Wayne writes very succinctly, I might add, which countries are not allowing packages in or out? That's all he wrote.
That is succinct.
I love questions like that.
Yeah. Direct and to the point.
Yeah. And to his point, I did a little research. And I found on the USPS site something called a service alert, and it's international service disruption. There's a long URL, which again, as we always do, we'll put it into the transcript. The issue I noticed when I was on there is that they're updating that page every day.
Yeah, so and that's specific to USPS.
Yes.
I don't know about the other carriers. I don't think they suffer from the same sort of restrictions necessarily because they're door-to-door. They don't rely necessarily on the postal carrier companies for each country. You know, they're right. International. I don't know why that was so hard to say.
The in-country carrier that they rely on.
I should have jumped in. So yeah, I'll give you that page. And I'm pretty sure when I've talked to Stuart Reichenbach about this in the past, that where we'll have buyers or who can see where they can buy items based on that list. So they have to stay on top of it too. But there is a list you can view every day.
And as you said, the link will be in the transcript.
It'll be in the transcript. And Brian, our third question comes from the web form on the eBay community podcast page. You know that little place where you can ask a question?
Yeah. So we got a question from each one of our kind of channels to get questions this week.
This is like hitting all threes. It's amazing.
I hope next week we get three more.
I think we will. Because I've already read them. It's from eBay seller Azaleas808.
I'll read this one, Griff.
Okay, you do that.
I know continuous listing is what keeps our eBay account stores active. But if we are in a situation where all our sources are unavailable, what else can we do to give a boost in our visibility? I've been doing some relisting, changing prices, updating descriptions, etc. Is that helping? Thanks.
Well, that's a good question, and I want to thank you, Azaleas808, for sending that in. I think that you might be laboring under a partial misconception, which is that you actually have to keep doing stuff in order for your accounts or your eBay stores to be active. That's not necessarily the case, but doing some judicious, well-planned, surgical, precise kind of updating of your listings is never a bad idea, whether you're sourcing or not. I don't know about the relisting, but yeah. I found that changing prices, you know, lowering your price is probably the best way to get sales. And it's definitely a helps boost in your visibility because lots of buyers search for lowest price first.
Yeah. And to me, I think if she's listing, and I'm going to make an assumption it's a she, listing all the time.
Wait, back up. Why would you think it was a she?
I don't know. I just...
Azaleas?
Azaleas 808. And so I think that's why.
You're showing your age, Brian. Go on.
I sometimes do show my age. Hopefully not too much dementia. The other thing that I wanted to say was like her concept about having to have her store active. I mean, if she has a store, it is active. I mean,
it is active.
As long as the monthly subscription fee is being paid for, it's going to be there. And I think one of the things that I always encourage any store owner to do is on a monthly basis, go in and look to see what's sold and what hasn't and what's getting visibility. We have those reports in Seller Hub and they're there for our sellers to take advantage of. And to your point, that's the way they can then go in and do some judicious kind of pruning and decide, okay, is there a listing that needs some changes made to it? You don't have to wholesale change everything or relist everything. Do like a supermarket does. They don't put everything on every aisle on sale every single week. They go through and do a couple things at a time.
Yeah. One thing she didn't mention in her list, and we haven't mentioned yet that she might want to, now I'm doing it, he or she might want to consider is that they made no mention about promotions. And we have a whole promotion suite that you should be applying. Maybe you're already doing it, but if you're not, you may want to consider running, for example, markdown sales and bundling some buy one, get one free or a discount for multiple purchases, shipping discounts for multiple purchases if you're not using free shipping. All of these things can really not only get you a boost in visibility, but they also catch eyeballs of people who've been watching. I assume that you're also using the send offer to buyers. That's a huge tool.
Huge. The sellers that take advantage of that one are so delighted with it. Because in a lot, you don't have to, you know, you can send the offer. And if a buyer is kind of on the fence, that might be the thing that gets them to make the decision.
Absolutely.
Lots of options for her.
I know that Azaleas is in the same sort of state that a lot of others, or situation that a lot of other sellers are in, where their regular sources are either closed or unavailable. I will mention that here in San Jose, I happened to drive by the San Jose, it's called the Willow Glen Goodwill store on Meridian and Hamilton, and it was open.
Yes, and the one down on San Carlos, I believe, in San Jose is open as well.
Amazing. So there's these stores are opening up. I'm not going to venture in. I'm too big a risk group. But if you're willing to venture out and you want to stay safe and social distance and wear a mask, don't assume that your thrift sources are all closed. Some of them are opening them up, depending on where you live. So check them out on Google. Search for your favorite thrift store and see if the local stores have started opening up, and maybe you can get back into sourcing as well.
I know there are some online options for sellers as well, and maybe that becomes, maybe we should talk to someone in the verticals team to have them come on and to talk about those things.
Hey, I've sourced a lot of product on eBay that yes. I've resold.
Hey, that's what I just did this week.
Exactly. You smart gentleman, you. Well, thanks for your question, Azaleas 808, and we are sorry if we may have messed up your gender. It was not intentional. I'm so pleased and relieved we had questions this week.
Yeah, me too, especially questions we could actually answer.
Yeah, we did. I got to tell you, Brian, we did receive, and we usually do receive, some questions and call-ins that are regarding account restrictions and ended listings. But as we said in the past, we can't address those types of questions on the podcast.
That's correct. Out of privacy concerns, we cannot address them on the air.
Yeah, and you know, we can't second guess our trust in customer support department.
No.
So those have to go directly to customer support for their attention.
But we are always happy to address your general eBay and selling questions on the podcast. And it couldn't be easier. Just call us on 888-723-4630.
888-723-4630. You can call that hotline any time of the day, any day of the week. And on the hotline message machine, you can leave a question or comment. And if it's appropriate, we just, as we did today with Andy, just might put it on the air.
Hopefully you'll call, but maybe you're too shy to call us. If that's the case, email your question to us at podcast@ebay.com. That's podcast@ebay.com.
And one more reminder, in order to maintain your privacy, you are not able to answer account-specific questions on the air.
And by account-specific, we mean questions about account suspensions, restrictions, or ended listings.
Again, those have to be sent directly to customer support. And the way you do that, by the way, is to click the help and contact link on the top of most any eBay page and just follow the instructions from there.
And
what?
Aren't you forgetting something?
Oh, right. I almost forgot your daily podcast to-do list.
I'm shocked you almost forgot that one.
Sorry.
Check the announcement board for up-to-date seller news.
Go visit the eBay community pages.
Check out the transcript for this and all episodes for follow-up on what you've heard and to see the links we reference during the episode.
And call us with your questions. That's a special add-in bonus check for this week. We want to thank our guests for this week's episode, eBay Vice President of Seller Experience, Harry Temkin, and eBay seller Trader Don, also known as Garb Safari on eBay.
Who's on for week 3 of Traffic Month next week?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked.
No problem. It's right here in the script. Brian says, who's on for week 3 of Traffic Month next week?
Yeah, that's it. Kill the magic, Brian. Well, next week, Brian, we'll explore how eBay utilizes social media to drive buyers to eBay. And you're not going to believe who our guest is.
Who?
Audrey Tracy!
Oh my gosh, you're not letting her back on, are you?
No, she works for the buyer marketing team, and I thought, well, I'll ask her, fully expecting her to decline. But to my surprise, she said, sure, I'll come on.
I'm glad she's going to join. That's great news. So make sure to listen in to episode 95 so you can hear Audrey return to the podcast. Until then, stay safe.
Stay sane.
And stay profitable by listening to each episode of the eBay for Business podcast. You can find previous episodes on the community podcast page at www.ebay.com/podcast.
And that's it for us. The eBay for Business podcast is produced and distributed by Libsyn and Podcast 411.